Hello, once again. Welcome back to Vox Pop, WAMC's live afternoon call-in talk show. I'm Ray Graff. Joining me today to answer your gardening questions, Greg Ward, who runs Ward's Nursery, Lawn and Garden Resource in Great Barrington, Massachusetts. Bob Graves is a horticulturalist and co-owner of Fadigan's Nursery in Latham, New York. He has also been an avid hands-in-the-dirt gardener for some 40 years already. Wow. Doesn't look even that agent.
Oh, come on now.
It's
you're
amazing.
Being very kind.
We welcome your calls, 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. You can also comment on the bottom of today's show page on the Vox Pop section of our website, wamc.org/VoxPop. You can comment on our Facebook wall post. It's facebook.com/WAMC Radio. Or you can tweet your questions and comments at WAMC Vox Pop or email us. Email works too, voxpop@wamc.org. But we do welcome your calls, 800-348-2551. And I should mention, if you were listening online, you can now do that again. Boy, we had some issues. Some network issues started yesterday. And boy, we worked through the night and into today to figure out what it was. Turned out that the audio streams and our video stream were reconnecting every 5 or 6 seconds. Wasn't in that. We did everything we could to search through the building and find there was no problem here. Made it to our internet service provider, fine there. Turned out, through some detective work and on behalf of many people, I want to thank everybody who was involved, we found out there was a hub somewhere down the New York City area where both our video streams and our audio streams, which go to different places, but they both went through this hub. There was trouble there, but thanks to our service providers, they have rerouted that, and we are back, and the streams work fine, so you can always tune in at WAMC.org. And with that, we get going on the program, and there's an empty chair here.
Yes, I think he'll be back, though.
Fred Breglia is at home nursing a broken tibia.
Oh, tibia.
Among other things, I believe.
Oh, which one is that?
I believe it's a leg bone, right?
Yeah.
It's connected to the ankle bone?
Yep.
And he's got to be off it for a few weeks.
Oh, dear.
So we wish Fred a speedy recovery, and we'll see him on the next program. What's up with you, gentlemen? Nice weather, eh?
Beautiful fall weather. Great weather to plant stuff.
It's
plant stuff or dig stuff up?
Plant stuff.
Well, actually both.
Okay.
Yeah. Transplanting, moving things around, excellent weather, dividing most things. Any small, you know, certainly any small shrub you feel like you can pick up once you've freed it from the ground is certainly transplantable. And planting things. What happens now is the weather allows the plants to have very little stress. So you take something home and it the leaves are on it. They're about to come off. So very little stress for that plant. It's already set buds for the following year. And then you plant it in the ground. You water it really well. We still recommend, I'm sure you do, Bob, to water it weekly still. But the plant's needs are greatly reduced. That amount of water
There's a lot of root growth that occurs in the fall. You know, we don't see any top growth, so you think that the plant is dormant.
Yeah.
But really, the roots will keep growing almost into December. After the frost, because the ground's still warm enough. So you get a lot of root growth now before you get into that heat of next summer.
Yeah.
And then the plant is way ahead of the game.
So until the ground freezes, the roots are expanding.
Okay. So, full lineup of calls here. So let's get right to the phones. 800-348-2551. We start with Jill in Great Barrington. Hi, Jill. You're on.
Hi. I have a small, it's actually not so small, but a little sort of an ornamental apple tree that is infected with cedar apple rust.
Mm. Yeah.
And I just would like to know what to do about it, because it's little brown leaves are ruining the lawn and just dropping over everything.
Yeah, it is weather related. So this year was very wet this spring, and then the cedar apple rust was able to actually attach. There's not a really good control if the weather is going to do that. I'm not sure what you guys are offering, Bob, but there certainly are fungicides you can apply to the tree.
What is cedar apple rust?
Fungus.
Yeah.
It's a fungus.
Fungus disease, leaf disease. It's also a disease that grows on different plants different years. It needs an alternate host, so it grows on something in the apple family one year and grows on something in the juniper family the next year. So wherever you have junipers and apples in close contiguity, you run into more problems.
Interesting.
With it.
Okay.
And so
the second season, it's done this too. It's just now for 2 years.
Right.
So the tree looks pretty bad.
So the juniper is releasing the spores in from these little kind of brown kind of globule-looking things in May, and the apple leaves are picking up those spores, and mm-hmm. then you get that little orangey round spot that mm-hmm. is in June and July.
The real answer to a fungus problem like that is to apply a fungicide, and it can be an organic fungicide or a non-organic one, but you need to do it before you see the problem, and you need to do it preventatively. Okay. Once you've got it, it's not going away.
Okay, so do it early in the spring?
Well, when the leaves come out. When the leaves come out.
When the leaves? Oh, so wait till that. Okay.
Yeah, it has to be on the leaf, really, to get much control.
Yeah. And
okay.
This is an apple tree?
Yeah, but with small little apples. It must be some kind of an ornamental, but it's gotten pretty big.
So it's a crab apple tree. I mean, yeah. You know, there are summers, you know, or springs that are drier and it's less likely to get the spotting. There are ornamental trees that are a little more resistant. If this is a newly planted tree, it may not show it. But if you see this on established trees, it didn't happen on the whole second new growth. The growth that came in July and August, they look pretty good. So any well-established tree may have some spots, but it's not something that's going to bother you. This may just be because this is a new tree with fairly few leaves that you're aware of it more.
All right, Jill.
No, it is well-established, but anyway. Okay, well, this is good news. Okay, thank you.
Thank you very much. Let's go over to Lisa in Kingston, or is it Lissa? I can't tell.
It's Lissa, like Melissa.
Hello, yeah. Lissa, you're on.
Hey, great. Thanks, Ray. I have a couple of beautiful azaleas. One, unfortunately, turned dark, dark brown. And I read up and found out that it had some kind of to look under the leaf, and it has some kind of a black bug on it.
Lace bug, probably.
Lace bug, that's what I read.
Yep.
Any suggestions for getting rid of it?
Well, in that case, if they're, you know, heavily infected, it would be something we would recommend. You would recommend an insecticide of some kind. So I'm not sure horticultural oil is a really effective non-toxic thing you can apply. There are several other insecticides. This bug will sort of stress the plant. It will reduce the plant a little bit. And so it's a good idea to try to eliminate it. It's not necessarily something that will be there next year, but you would look again in July to see if it's there.
Yeah, the new growth will come out next year and look pretty good, but if you can apply, as Greg said, something like a horticultural oil, the trick with that is it's a contact killer and you have to get good coverage, and this insect is on the underside of the leaf, so you need to get under the leaf with it.
And what's the best way to apply that then?
With a spray of some sort, something that has a fair amount of swirl to it, so you're getting underneath
the
leaf.
Some hose application devices you just hook this to your hose. The active ingredient, the oil, is put in the container, and if getting them really good and wet, and as Bob's saying, trying to get the leaves underneath wet.
Is this another situation where you have to wait until spring to do this, or do you do it now?
It depends on how active they are. If they're still there and active, you probably could do something now. Typically, you're trying to do something just as they emerge, which I believe is going to be around the 1st of July.
Yeah, warmer.
Okay, so I could try it now, but definitely do it in the spring.
What you're going to want to do is check again in late June, early July, start to check the brand new growth, the growth that's really nice and healthy looking. Just start flipping those leaves over maybe every week and look for some of those insects.
How big are the insects?
They're quarter inch.
Very small.
So you can see them.
You can see them, but they're small.
Okay.
And they're flat, and they sort of are hugging the leaf, the bottom side of the leaf.
Okay.
Wonderful.
All right, Lissa.
Great. Thank you so much for your help. I truly appreciate it.
Thanks a lot. Now, you guys mentioned possibly having to use some sort of a pesticide. That can be a scary word. And what can you do that's safe?
It can be, but there are a lot of pesticides. You know, we talk about hazard and toxicity with pesticides. And there are a lot of things that are very low in toxicity and also fairly low in hazard. And most of those are contact killers, like a horticultural oil, which, as it implies, is just an oil, or an insecticidal soap. There are also some other types that are organic where you're actually suffocating the insect by clogging their breathing pores. They work well on insects that don't move fast. Lace bugs, spider mites, scales don't work as well on things like white fly or things that move around fairly quickly. But a lot of control can be gained with very low hazard type materials.
Well, yeah, most of the time, you know, a lot of these ornamentals are going to work out pretty well on their own. The lace bug can be a perennial problem, but if you eliminate it once, it usually doesn't come back again. And then increasing vigor, making sure that the plants are well mulched, that you're fertilizing once a year to create a stronger plant, sort of limits the ability of most
insects are often symptomatic of a cultural problem. That is, if a plant is suffering because of heat or drought or planting too deep, often an insect will affect a plant that's already having some.
So it's going for the weaker of the plants.
Sure, absolutely.
Very interesting. You know, years ago, no one really cared too much about what you put on to get rid of bugs. But is there a good resource now to find out about some of the things that are out there and what you may or maybe shouldn't use in the garden? Aside from going to your stores, obviously, which is a good,
essentially,
good start.
You know, there are a lot of products that are available to you at the garden center, the hardware store, big box stores. All of those stores have products that you can then take home and use. They all list there's a general toxicity level listed. There are three words used, warning, caution, and danger. They're all right there by the active ingredient area. Warning, obviously, being the least toxic. So you can certainly use that as a way to measure by looking at the pesticides. The other thing is just to look up kinds of ingredients to see if they're sustainable, B, will break down into more benign things.
All right, you guys, I assume, are up on this. So if somebody walks in the store, you will have
hopefully
good advice.
Yes.
All right, Zach, let's take a break here. It's the Garden Show for the month of September. Greg Ward and Bob Graves are here. I'm Ray Graff. We'll be back in a moment.
Support for WAMC comes from Wiawaka Lake George, New York, an enrichment and revitalization historic lakefront retreat created by and for women since 1903. WIAWAKA.org for events. East Heaven Hot Tubs and Paradise Spa, Northampton, Massachusetts, offering private hot tub room rentals with indoor or outdoor rooftop tubs, massage for couples and individuals, eastheaven.com for reservations. The Alternative Baker, Rosendale, artisan all butter baked goods made from scratch, handcrafted lemon velvet cakes and egg sandwiches daily, where taste is everything, lemoncakes.com. And the Honest Weight Food Co-op, open at their new location, 100 Watervliet Avenue, Albany, offering local and organic produce, groceries, and more, honestweight.coop.
Not even a week. My heavens. On Monday morning at 6 a.m., the fun drive kicks off here at WAMC. We hope you join us. And if you want to get your pledge in early, we'd love that too. You can feed the lockbox. There's a lockbox icon on our website, WAMC.org. You can make a secure online pledge. And everything will count as we start the fun drive on Monday. And last check, somewhere around $141,000 in the lockbox. So that's well over a very good day. We've taken off the fun drive already. If you want to make your pledge, WAMC.org. And, of course, we will see you on Monday morning for the fun drive. It's the Vox Pop Gardening Show. Number to call here is 800-348-2551, 1-800-348-2551. Greg Ward of Ward's Nursery is here. Bob Graves of Fatigan's Nursery answering your questions. And let's go to Greg in Utica. Greg.
Hey, Ray. Good afternoon.
Good afternoon.
I'm hoping your guests can help me. I hope I've got the right forum for it.
All right.
So I have an infestation of bees, just common garden variety bees, in my hot tub. Not swimming around, but like inside of it.
What?
So in their humble opinion, is winter just going to take care of them, or do I need to do something proactive?
They're inside the housing of the hot tub?
That's correct.
Can you open it up and find out where the nest is?
Yes and no. I opened it. I took one side off, and I did find a small nest.
Mm-hmm.
I removed that, closed it back up, but they're still buzzing in and out during this nice weather that we're having.
Yeah, if you can, you can always, when it's cool at night, physically remove any nests. That's a good way to get rid of them. And you could also put some traps. There are bee and wasp traps that you bait and that you put near it where they go into it. I don't know that I'd want to be spraying too much in and around.
I think your first question about whether they'll be gone come winter is, the answer is yes, that they will not persist there in the winter, especially if you can look around and you know, see that there's no major hive being built. You know, I would think that cleaning them out is going to do it, as you did already. But as Bob said, there's a lot of activity now. You know, they're really kind of flying in lots of different directions. The weather change really sort of makes them more active. So you may just be seeing a lot more. That, however, they may, I don't know, you're saying they're going into these holes just
to
check it out?
Well, yeah, they seem to be lighting right on one particular corner, and I can see activity in and out.
And can you close that off?
Well, gosh, they're awful small. I don't think I can keep them out. But that's a thought. I'll have to scratch my head on that one a little bit.
Yeah. Well, that's interesting. I mean, thanks for the definitely the weirdest call of the show,
so far.
Greg.
Okay.
Appreciate that very much. Good luck. And interesting. Donald in Red Hook, you're up. Donald.
Hi. Yes. my question is about tomato plants. And this year I had a low harvest of tomatoes. My plants turned brown. Is there anything I can prepare for next year to prevent that? Or what makes the plants turn brown when I...
First of all, I'd like to say join the club.
Yeah, this is not a good year for tomatoes.
It was not.
We got a couple.
I mean, tomatoes came, but they also, before they ripened, they got some deterioration, some rotting. So you lost tomatoes, even though you thought you were going to have more tomatoes.
Yeah.
Essentially the basic deal for all your vegetable plants, and tomatoes top of the list, is rotate the location. Don't plant them in the same place for 2 years running, so that you have at least three locations you can put your tomatoes.
I do that.
So move them around. Great. Remove all of the tomato debris, every stem, every little rotten fruit you can find from the garden. And if you're going to compost those, which you still should, don't work that into compost you may be putting back in the garden anytime soon. Work it into a different compost, maybe in the one you almost never use, so that they're not going to be making it back into the garden anytime soon.
Right.
Once you get to spring, you know, again, making sure the weeds are clean, etc. Once you get to spring, making sure any little tomato plants that may sprout are pulled up, any seedlings that come up on their own are sort of removed.
Mm-hmm.
And mulching the ground so that putting a straw, a leaf mold, black plastic, any of those things to sort of keep splash from the ground up onto the leaves from occurring.
Also very important with tomatoes to try to maintain a consistent soil moisture. And this was a tough year for that. We had a lot of wet weather, and then it got really hot and dry. And they don't like that. They like a fairly consistent moisture. So when it does get dry, if you keep them well watered, and you can use an organic fungicide on those before you see the problem, if you wish to too.
Oh, it could have been fungus that...
Oh, I think that's probably most of the problem.
Several.
Yeah.
You have bacterial issues. There's some fungal issues. That's why you're going to clean up all of that debris. By removing everything, what's a great thing with tomatoes, you are pretty much eliminating the possibility of it being there again. However, it could still winter on some small piece on the ground that you couldn't find. So that's why you want to rotate the plants. Besides, there are other reasons as well. And then by mulching and reducing that splash, you really run into you really reduce the risk of that spreading.
Mm-hmm. All right, Donald.
Okay, thank you.
Thanks a lot. Now you mentioned the bacteria wintering, so it doesn't necessarily die in the middle of a winter.
Oh no, things overwinter, particularly if you have any leaf litter or old plants around, the spores and the disease organisms, just as insects overwinter as eggs. You get disease organisms that can overwinter.
We've had a frost over there in the Berkshires. I'm not sure if Albany had one yesterday.
Yet.
It was a really light one, and it skimmed a few things. I'm not sure. Maybe North Berkshires, it got a little bit colder. And so that's sort of the time to start pulling things up.
Yeah.
And so you want to get out there and do that. And that, not just tomatoes, everything should sort of come up as you're done with them. Now your kale, your cabbage, your broccoli, they all probably look great. They can stay for quite a bit longer.
But even if you get rid of all the debris and safely put it far away, I mean, you could still have it next year.
Sure.
The airborne spores,
yeah? Yep,
so,
airborne.
Yeah, weather is a big factor. Again, you know, we were talking earlier about the rain with the cedar apple rust. Well, the cool weather of June and all the rain, the really hot weather and humid weather of July, it was just a little too much. The fluctuation is too much.
Okay, let's go back to the phones. Greg Ward is here. Bob Graves is here. I'm Ray Graff. Mike in Saratoga is up. Mike.
Hey, good afternoon, gentlemen.
Hi.
I have a lawn care question that's in your expertise, but right now my backyard is like a botanical garden for weeds. Like, I think probably every weed imaginable is in there, and the grass is pretty much gone. So I'm wondering, is there anything I can do in the fall? I'm hoping, like, more of an organic solution to maybe start getting rid of them for next year.
Well, you know, the organic way to control things is to maximize the conditions for grass. The better soil quality you have, the stronger and thicker the grass is, the more accurate or more correct your pH is. All of those things are your organic ways to control weeds. Now, there are some organic weed controls, too. You can use corn gluten, which will prevent weed seed germination in the fall and in the spring. There are a few spot treatments of organic broadleaf weed killers. But the main thing, first thing I do is get your pH checked and make sure the pH of the lawn is correct. And then think about some organic fertilizers.
And there's a test, like, you just, how do you do that? Do you buy one at the store and bring it back?
For pH, I mean, you can bring it in. We can check it at Fadigan's, or you can take it to Cooperative Extension, or you can buy a kit.
Okay.
Yeah,
very simple.
Very good. And I sympathize with you, Mike. My lawn is so bad in the front. We've done everything we could and spent a great deal of money, and finally, now I've given up, and the crabgrass or whatever it is thick and lush and very, it's beautiful, actually.
You know, one of the things you need to keep in mind with a lawn is that grass is a crop. It's like hay or corn or wheat or oats, and if the soil is poor, the crop isn't very good.
And, you know, there are fairly significant projects you can do to renovate that. If you truly want to eliminate, you know, all of that weed material and get it back to grass, you will have to remove those things. And you have to remove those. And, you know, the best organic way would be to use either an organic herbicide, such as some of the vinegar-based products, or covering it with, a plastic for a certain amount of time, or tilling it, literally breaking ground. And that's going to be something you'll have to do a couple of times in order to eliminate those root crops, and then you seed over that. And I would say there's not enough time at this point to do all of that and have a successful lawn this fall. But if you do some of those things, or if you overseed now and fertilize now, you can make your lawn look a little bit better and then start over in the spring.
Well, it's all in the eye of the beholder, Mike. I mean, just keep it mowed and sit back and enjoy it. Thanks a lot for the call. We have one here from the internet. I have some very small blueberry and lilac bushes, which were started from bare rootstock this spring. How do I protect them during this winter? Should I do anything special?
I would definitely make sure that they're not able to be browsed by larger animals, especially deer. Blueberries and lilacs are not their favorite foods, at least not in the Berkshires, but they will eat them. They will, certainly blueberries at any rate, will
especially rabbits. The rabbits will eat them right to the ground.
Yep. So you want to do that. You definitely want to make sure that there are no other competing plants around them. So make sure that if you've planted these in a nice spot, but you've ignored it for a while, all the weeds are taken up. There's a nice 1-inch layer of mulch there.
A cylinder of hardware cloth of a fine wire mesh, a cylinder put over the top, will tend to keep the rabbits away. Lilacs are pretty hardy. They don't get browsed by too much. But again, because they're small, you might want to put something there to mark them so you know where they are.
Okay.
That's about it. Just making sure they're
not eaten is the main thing.
It's Vox Pop on WAMC, the gardening show for September. A reminder that on Monday, the fun drive begins. Greg Ward is with us, Bob Graves, and your calls at 800-348-2551. Norbert in Vermont, you're up.
Yeah, hi. I have some pear trees, Seckel and Bartlett pears, and the last couple of years, when the fruit come on, this year the trees are loaded with fruit, especially the older ones. And it looks as though the fruit is sucked in on itself. The fruit is all gnarled, and even though you could, get a couple bites off each one around the edges where it's normal looking, the fruit is not anything like it's supposed to look like.
The first thing I was thinking when you said misshapen, or that's what they wrote, was some kind of insect bite or hail damage is also a possibility, that something literally damaged the fruit and then it scarred up and healed that way. But this doesn't sound like that. I don't have something on the top of my head.
Pears are generally speaking, pretty easy fruit to grow in terms of the problems that they have. But in a year like this, where we had, and I guess the weather's becoming more unusual every year, but this seems to have been a particularly unusual one, you're more likely to have some insect or fungal damage. There are some organic fruit tree sprays that are primarily sulfur and pyrethrins that you could try to use next year in anticipation of the problem. And nothing you can do about it once it's happened, of course.
Norbert, too, I wouldn't mind taking a look at that if you are able to send a photo.
Mm.
Is that something you could do?
You mean on the computer or mail?
Yeah, well, computer would be convenient.
Okay. Yeah, my son might be able to do that.
All right. I'll give you. Why don't we give your contact information, gentlemen?
Yeah. So if you could send a photo, via email to info@wardsnursery.com, and get a couple of shots, we could take a look at that. And Bob,
you have contact information too, Bob?
Yeah, mine could go to rgraves@fadigans.com.
All right, Norbert. Hey, good luck with that. We appreciate it. Let's go to Gene in Catskill. Gene. Okay, we got to turn the radio down. Gene, hello.
Your contact information.
Oh, boy, that's not going to work out. I'm sorry, Gene. I apologize. Rule number one is you keep the radio down, and I know you've been on hold a long time, and I apologize to you. Mary and Charlemont, you're on.
Hi. Thanks for helping us out. I'm looking for either a type of rhododendron or azalea that grows about 5 or 6 feet tall. If not the shortest one, how can I keep it at that height?
So there are lots of choices. Broadleafed rhododendrons are generally completely evergreen and have a leaf that's maybe, inch and a half or 2 inches wide and 3 or 4 inches long. There are, for Charlemont's a kind of a cold spot in Massachusetts, so, there are several sort of mauvey pink ones that are referred to as
Catawba hybrids.
Yeah, Catawba hybrids, such as Roseum elegans, English Roseum.
Yep. Roseum pink,
superbum. They're all very similar. There's a nice red one called Nova Zembla. There's another nice red one called Henry's Red. That's also a possibility. And there's a really nice white one called Catalbiens or CAT, Cat Album. All of those are great broadleaf ones.
And azaleas, the expiries are quite hardy. They're deciduous azaleas, so they lose their leaves, but they have you've probably seen them, the big orange flowers or pink or peach or white or red. Those are excellent if you're looking for something that has a little size to it, too, and an azalea that's hardy.
There are some sort of spreading, almost semi-evergreen, we tend to call them semi-evergreen azaleas, that would stay under 5 feet forever. And they're in these Korean azalea groups, so... The woman's name Karen is a very nice sort of hot purple one. There's a series called Gerards, of which there's a couple that can work. There's a very nice white one called Pleasant White that should work in a. We recommend a eastern exposure,
yes.
So morning sun ideally, no wind. That's sort of the ideal location for any of those plants we mentioned.
How do you do that? I mean, there's wind everywhere.
Well, east side's usually protected. And, the upstate New York area, particularly in Connecticut and Massachusetts and Vermont, the climate can vary so much depending upon elevation. I mean, you can go from a zone 5, almost 6, to a zone 3 in a matter of an hour's drive in this area. So you got to be careful of your microclimate.
So any other questions there?
No, this is great help. Thank you very much.
Okay. Mary, thank you very much for the call. And the number to call is 1-800-348-2551. Maria in Ulster County. Maria, you're up.
Hi. We've been living in somewhat relative harmony with a nest of giant or European hornets over the front door.
Yikes.
Oh, dear.
And I called the pesticide company, and they said they could come and spray them. And I said, well, where will they go when they die? And they say, well, just anywhere. And so that I envisioned a bunch of dead hornets on my front grass being toxic and being eaten by birds and my dogs and, you know, like that. So anyway, I thought, let's not spray. So we've been careful. They do, by the way, fly at night if there's any light at all, like a flashlight or something.
Huh.
Okay. So, yeah, because they feel that when we open and close the door when I take my dogs out at the end of the day, they must feel the vibration of the door. They feel threatened, and a few of them come out. And if the light is on the porch, they'll go towards the light or towards the flashlight if it's, you know, close enough.
Is it a giant paper nest?
No. Oh, let me explain. We have a rustic house which has decorative logs over the door, so you cannot see the nest. And it's a European or giant hornet. Boy. They're an inch long. What? So I was also worried about the spray coming into the walls of the house or them dying. So I left them alone, and I'm hoping that they will die in the winter and not come back to the same nest in the summer, in the spring, as I've read on the internet. But what I also read was something about the queen laying eggs and the queen might survive. And so do you know anything about what might be ahead of us?
Well, the first thing I would say is, do you have another door?
Oh yeah. But it's
you mean block that one off?
Well, just don't use that door for a little while longer.
That's a little drastic.
Never again.
So you could, you know, so you can don't have to disturb them. And then if they're in the house, I am certainly not an expert on hives that are built in the houses. I've seen a few when I renovated my house.
Yeah.
There were some old ones. You pull that
siding
off, and there it is. It's quite gorgeous.
Yeah.
I mean, it's really
impressive,
beautiful, and it's big, so it's great insulation. that's for sure. But I would, you know, I would consider closing it up once winter comes.
You know, Maria.
Well, that's what I was wondering. I mean, if we closed up, first of all, we could spray like that spray foam or something. I mean, it's a little hard to see, but I mean, they'll come out any time. They could come right out and kill me if I go up there with them.
We got to take a break here, Maria, and I won't mention names of companies, but my family has used this organic pest control place over the other side of the river from Albany, and very, very effective and safe stuff. So you might want to look into that. We do have to take a break. Good luck with the enormous, frightening hornets. We'll take a break on Vox Pop. We'll be back.
Support for WAMC comes from Ashfield Stone, Shelburne Falls, Massachusetts. Quarry and fabrication used for enduring landscapes and interiors, including countertops and floor planking, rare and wonderful native stone of the Berkshires, ashfieldstone.com. Empire Exhibits and Displays, Albany, New York. Custom exhibits, interactive displays, and commercial casework for trade shows, events, museums, and corporate interiors, empireexhibits.com. Don Mother Gallery, Northampton, Massachusetts. Specializing in jewelry, custom designs, handcrafted glass, and gifts by American artists since 1978. Facebook and DonMotherGallery.com. And the Montessori School of the Berkshires. Working to foster independence in an experimental learning environment. Rolling admissions for toddler program through 8th grade. BerkshireMontessori.org.
It's the Garden Show on Vox Pop, and nice to have you with us this afternoon, 2:43 on a Wednesday. Here's another one, gentlemen, from the email, I believe, Peter in New Paltz. I have a 3-foot-tall Alberta spruce in a planter to make it taller. What should I do with it in the winter? Water it, move it into the garage, leave it where it is?
That sort of depends on what the temperature's like where you are.
All of the above, really. I mean, one of the things people want is for something to look at in the middle of January and February. So leaving it out is an option. As we were saying earlier, if it's getting a lot of sun, if it's that south face of your house and it's going to get a lot of sun in January and February, it will dry out quite a bit, and that can be a stress. And so taking the whole thing and sliding it into the garage is often what we recommend to protect it.
The stresses on a plant in the pot in this part of the world can be great in the wintertime because they do dry out since they're in a limited soil mass. But also the soil in that pot at the root zone will be 30 or 40 degrees colder than what it would be if the plant was in the ground. And you also have repeated freezing and thawing. So bringing it into a garage, for example, or a shed, solves a lot of those problems in the wintertime.
Okay. Well, that's good. Oh, yeah, that wasn't a call. That was email. Let's go to Gene in Catskill. Gene, you're on.
Hello.
Hello.
I'm sorry, my phone died before, but here I am again.
Hello.
I was wanting to ask your experts if they have any cure for black spot on roses. I've had wonderful David Austin roses for 7 years now, and this year they are covered with black spot. A friend in Martha's Vineyard advised me to crush 2 aspirin in a quarter and say them, but seemed to do very little good indeed.
Okay.
The kind of home there are a lot of home remedies that are fungicides or potential fungicides fungicide control, baking soda is a possibility. Chamomile tea is a possibility. Compost tea, which means you literally make up a bucket of compost, let it sit around in the sun, and then strain it off and spray that. Yeah.
There are some good organics available too. Most of them based on plant oils, peppermint oil, and things of that sort, which actually work very well. But it has to be done, as with most fungicides, before you see the problem start to arise.
And continued
yeah.
while you don't see this. So what, as a rose gardener, it's often recommended that you would be doing some kind of preventative treatment, both fungal and insect treatment, on a 7 to 14 day schedule. And that would, if you did that, that would hopefully keep the black spot from appearing.
And as we were talking earlier in the show, hygiene's really important here in the fall, cleaning up, trimming them back, getting all the old leaves out of there to minimize the sources of infection for next year.
Right. Could I ask you one tiny question? Is it anything to do how we can stop rabbits chewing away? I've lost a whole row of Montauk daisies, and I've sprayed with the rabbit spray and deer spray, and it's made a difference. They seem to think it's a sort of condiment.
Wow. Usually the sprays work pretty well with rabbits. They're some combination of rotten egg, dried blood, garlic. The other option is to fence them, just to physically exclude them.
I would hate to do that. Yeah. I bought a haverheart, and I caught 3 and released them into a larger and happier place. But I've got more because they seem to be breeding like rabbits.
I guess I'm
in trouble.
Well,
thank you.
Okay.
Gene, thanks a lot for the call. I appreciate it. Let's go to, is it MC in Poughkeepsie? MC?
Yes, hi. Sorry, I tried calling earlier, but my phone dropped.
That's what it was. Okay.
I'm calling from a landline now.
All right.
So I'm actually calling because of the guy earlier that had what he said were bees in his hot tub.
Yeah.
I'm a beekeeper in Poughkeepsie, and I know a lot of beekeepers around the Hudson Valley might have been just, pulling at their hair when they heard you guys talking about it. First and foremost, if they're honeybees, he could call, he could just look up online and find, a local bee club.
Okay.
And a beekeeper will, beekeepers will fall over themselves to come and save those bees.
Oh, good. Fair enough.
If he opens up... like you had suggested, you open it up and take, quote-unquote, the nest out. If it's comb, you have to take the queen out. You have to physically remove the queen from the space. Huh. If the queen is still there, the bees are going to go back, period.
I think he was referring to a small wasp, paper wasp nest.
Was it wasp? Yeah,
he never really discussed a swarm of any kind. It was very intermittent.
Yeah,
very small,
he said. If it is bees, let's say, right,
mm-hmm.
And they did swarm out of a hive, whatever, if they're in there,
yeah.
It could still be honeybees.
Okay.
And they're just they've found a home that they think is appropriate.
Do honeybees like hot tubs?
They just like small, confined spaces in which they can have, an entrance that they can guard, which might be one of these holes.
Yeah.
And they're building their comb. So it's
fair
just,
enough.
Just don't be quick to judge. Is
okay.
All I'm saying.
Fair enough.
It's see if they're honeybees. And if they're honeybees, call a local beekeeper, and they will run over there in, a heartbeat to get them for
Great
you.
Great advice. And I assume that there is one in the Utica area, and hopefully he'll do that. Let's go to Joan in Sheffield. Joan, you're on. Hello, Joan. Hello, Joan. Are you there, Joan? Joan's not there. Let's go to somebody else. Sorry, Joan. Dee in Delanson. Dee, you're on.
Hi. I've got two tree questions. The first is that I've read that you're not supposed to modify the soil when you plant a tree, and I'd like to put in some small trees this fall, and my soil is so poor and clay that I think I'm dooming them by, you know, planting with, without doing something. I'm wondering what you think.
There is this this concern that if you significantly modify soil, especially compacted soil or soil with a lot of clay in it, you will create a little bowl or reservoir where the and the tree won't leave that space.
Right.
As a general rule, if you're I'm not sure if you're talking about planting, if you're talking about apple trees, is that what you're talking about?
Apple and plum. Yeah.
So, you know, that said, most soils, if this is a nice, you know, sort of lawn or field area, and the grass has been growing fairly well there, or the weeds, whatever you have, for quite a while, then more than likely that soil is going to be reasonable. When you plant that tree, the soil that's there could be just the soil that you use, or you could amend that soil. Kind of the latest thing about amendment is to mostly amend the top. And so, yes, you're actually going to dig a shallow, wide hole so that the root ball of the plant sits firmly on the bottom of the hole, but that the hole itself is 2 or 3 or more feet wide.
Okay. Yeah, wide shallow seems to be the preferred method at this time.
So that it looks like a bowl. And then you put back all of the soil you took out, making sure that the root flare of the tree is exposed, the place where the trunk ends and the roots come out, that is visible. And then a light layer of compost covering the top, in addition to some mulch, or just mulch, is a significant way to increase the survivability of your trees. A wide mulched area.
Right. So you just add it in the top inch or so.
Yes.
Okay. The second question was, I've got a tall apple tree that's in a hedgerow. It's got very good apples, but not very many. And it's so tall that I can't get up to the top of it. I'm wondering if I topped that off and brought it down to, you know, 15 feet or so, if that would kill the tree or if it might cause it to fruit better.
Well, you can trim apple trees, you know, very substantially. I would go ahead and there's no point in having it there if you can't use it. So, you know, take the top off carefully and trim it all back. And really, with trimming on a fruit tree, it's an architectural engineering problem. You want strength. You're not too much concerned what it looks like. You're trying to get branches that can hold the weight is your main objective.
Okay. All right, and if Fred was here, I'm sure you'd have some more advice.
Oh, he would.
Yeah, he's a tree guy. But, Dee, thanks a lot for the call. Let's go over to Jim in Albany. Jim, you're on.
Hi.
Hello.
We planted a Asian lily, or Asian lilac, about a month ago, and the leaves were yellow to begin with. We dug the hole, put in some bone meal-like substance, and throwing a lot of compost, and then filled it back in. Anyhow, the leaves continued to yellow, so I sprayed it with some Natria, Bacillus product, and that didn't do anything. So I went back and sprayed it with some Daconil, and that's kind of slowed things down, but it's still looking, you know, it's got green leaves on it, but it's still got a fair number of yellow leaves that are turning brown at the ends. And
Jim, if you definitely, it's been at your house for a month, no more than that.
Yes.
So those leaves are heading into fall, and they started that process early. So I wouldn't worry too much about the color of the leaves from anywhere from late August into September, especially on a new tree.
Yeah, things get stressed, whether they're bald and burlapped or in pots when they're in our nurseries. They begin to stress much earlier than things that are in the ground. So there sounds like it's just started its fall leaf drop prematurely, which for a plant that's newly planted is relatively normal.
Yeah, and so on the ends of all the branches where those yellow leaves are, should be some fairly firm greenish brown buds.
Okay.
And so if you look around and those buds are evenly dispersed, you don't have too much in the way of wood that has no buds or that is dry or dead, then you're well on your way to wintering that tree for spring.
Okay.
Okay, clean up the leaves or
the leaves
know?
Will fall off as we get colder weather. Anyway, yeah, certainly remove them, but there's no need to spray them with anything.
Yeah, it's not a tree that has a whole lot of disease and insect problems anyway. It's pretty hardy.
Okay.
Yep.
Jim, thank you. Appreciate the call. Let's go over to Joan in Sheffield. Joan, I think we tried you before. Are you on?
I'm on.
Hello.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
My question is about dahlias. I have some old ones and some brand new ones, and I want to know when to dig them up and how do I know how to divide the tubers and how to store them.
So dividing the tubers could happen now, but you might want to wait until spring.
Oh, really? Leave them in the ground.
And the reason is that when you divide them, you're going to cut them. And so in cutting them, you're opening up some potential areas for rot. These tubers are now going to sit there for, 6 or 7 months before you plant them again. And so you want to minimize that. So the best thing to do is to get them up out of the ground. You would cut the green stem off to, an inch or two. You would rinse them thoroughly, clean all the soil off of them, and let them dry. You can do this actually in a sunny spot if you want, or if it's not too hot, or in the garage in an airy spot, put them on a screen or something. And then I like to wrap each one in newspaper. I also like to label the color at that time because I can never remember the next spring what color they are. And so each clump would be wrapped once it was dry in newspaper, and then you can throw them all together in a box. And in the spring, they will be eyes. They will start to be sprout. They'll start to sprout. This will be April. You can then divide them, trying to maintain at least some reasonable mass of tuber with an eye or two, with a little bit of growth coming off of it.
And you just stick them in the basement, Greg, or garage?
Oh, yeah.
Or?
I put them in. My basement's pretty cool. Mm. I like the basement. You can't let them freeze.
No freezing, but not don't want it too warm either.
Right.
Yeah.
But they're profusely flowering now, so I don't want to dig them up now. I mean, they've got gorgeous blooms on them.
Wait.
So how late into the season can I dig them?
You can wait until they have been thoroughly done in by a freeze, by the frost.
Okay, until a frost.
Yeah.
All right.
Could be a month from now.
Okay, I have one more quick question. I have a huge wisteria plant, tree. It's a tree at this point. It's got some seedlings. What can I transplant those and put them where I want?
This is a great time.
Pardon me?
Perfect timing, yes.
Yes. How about the seed pods on the wisteria? It's got all these beautiful velvet seed pods. Can you plant those?
The seeds in those? You could, yeah, I always advocate creating a little nursery, planting several seeds there so that when you have germination, you can then choose the stronger ones.
Okay.
Okie dokie.
Joan, thank you very much. Let's go quickly. Kate, you only have about a minute here. Kate in Albany, you're on.
Hi there. Quick question. I have some bees that are boring into a wood railing. The exterminator came by and he said they were boring bees. They wouldn't harm anybody. However, they do leave that little wood nest. How can I get rid of them?
The primary recommendation on that is to seal up the holes.
We tried that.
Yeah, prevent the access to them.
The railing is not painted?
No, it is painted.
So generally paint or a heavy stain or a sealer pretty much keeps them from doing that. So
it will, okay.
They really only like sort of open, exposed wood or wood that has, was painted a long time ago.
Yeah.
Okay. So maybe this was more recently painted and that will take care of them, you're saying.
That's what I would certainly try that if you haven't yet. Yes.
Uh-huh.
All right.
Alrighty. Well, thank you for your time.
Thank you, Kate. And may I say that this is the, without question, the greatest number of bee questions ever fielded on a program here. And nicely done, gentlemen. I know it's not your strong point, but you did very well. And, gosh, what next? I mean, I'm almost speechless here. But, maybe we'll have an exterminator on at some point.
Well,
we could do that.
All right, fair enough. But not during the gardening show.
Okay.
All right. Well done. And Greg Ward runs Ward's Nursery. Good luck at the shop in Great Barrington. Bob Graves, thanks for being here.
Thank you.
Fatigan's Nursery is in Latham. Guys, quickly, the websites.
Oh, and I also have one more present for you, Ray.
Oh, my gosh. Is that garlic?
Yeah, a little garlic. I want you to grill that for me.
How do I grow it?
I'm going to tell you.
All right, you tell me off the air.
Okay.
I have underwriting to do. All right, support comes from the Arkell Museum at Canada Johari, presenting An American in Venice, James McNeil Whistler and His Legacy, with etchings by Whistler, John Marin, and more, arkellmuseum.org. Quality Foreign Car Care, Boston Spa, New York, specializing in European car sales and service for over 20 years, qfcc.com. HMT at the Spa Little Theater, opening their 29th season, beginning October 11th with the musical comedy The Drowsy Chaperone in the Saratoga Spa State Park, homemadetheater.org. And Veterinary Emergency and Specialty Hospital, South Deerfield, Massachusetts, providing ophthalmology, surgery, and internal medicine services for dogs and cats, now offering laser eye surgery, VESHDeerfield.com. Thanks again for calling in, everybody, with your B questions. Zach Malloy was our engineer. Our phones were answered by Colleen O'Connell. Our producer is Jessica Blaustein. Marshall, I'm Ray Graff. Tomorrow, we welcome Gordon Fricke. It's automotive repair for September. Stay tuned now for a news update. And thanks for the garlic, Greg. I appreciate it.